welcome to the Stanley Street Social Podcast presented by MAP. My name is Alex Clements. I'm here with Campbell Flakemore today and on the roaming camera, Riley Hart. Thanks to MAP for presenting the podcast. As always, if you haven't already, you're a Melbourne resident or even if you're a fly-in, make sure you check out their store in North Melbourne. It's a ripper. And as always, I have this premium kit in there and it's all you need, really.
They released their new bib shorts recently. Yeah, there was a lot of talk about that on the socials.
3.0. Apparently, it's unbelievable.
Of course it is.
Well, they always do things good. First off, Campbell, you're going to kick us off with the first segment. What do we need to know from the last 2 weeks of racing?
Well, there's been probably the two biggest one-week tours. Of the year in Paris-Nice and Torino. Paris-Nice, super windy start. It's kind of the first big showdown between a lot of the sprinters and Dylan Groenewegen. He took two stages. It was windy. Lotto Jumbo, Dutch team, they love the wind. They got the chockies. Caleb Ewan was mighty close on stage one, so it shows that his form was pretty good, Alex, heading into San Remo, which we'll touch on shortly. But he actually didn't get a stage win, and it was Sam Bennett. He picked up two as well. So Caleb Ewan, yeah, he picked up a win in the Middle East, but still yet to jag one in Europe this year. And the overall winner was Bernal, who he was assisted in the earlier stages through Luke Rowe. We put a tweet out of Luke Rowe in the crossies, just taking the piss. Like, he really was taking the piss. I'm not sure if you guys have seen it, but licks his finger, puts it into the wind, testing the wind speed, and then bang, it just goes straight in the gutter, and he's just like straight into the wheel. No stress. So, yeah, Bernal, I think he's the youngest winner of all time in Paris-Nice. Alberto Contador was 24, Eddie Merckx was 23, and Bernal's 22, Alex. That's mighty young.
That is really young. Think back to when you were 22, what you were doing. We were still flapping around and junior teams trying to find our way, holding your own in Paris-Nice and holding your own in the crosswinds and taking the race on at 22. That's unbelievable.
Yeah, it is. But like I said before, if you've got guys like Luke Rowe that can just guide you through those sticky situations. But yeah, they had Kwiatkowski there as well, who probably a little bit flat. I would have thought maybe not to pick up the double. Yes, he probably comes across as if he's happy for his teammate, but I reckon Kwiatkowski probably wanted that win.
The same way Froome was happy for other year.
I am happy for him. But there's one talking point as well, Alex. This time trial result at Paris-Nice. Simon Yates won the time trial, and it wasn't like it was an average speed of 41 or 42. He won average speed of 50k an hour.
I hadn't previously looked at the time trial parkour and saw the result sheet. Okay. Must have been an uphill drag because, like, Youngers was 11th, but Bernal was in the mixer.
Martinez.
It was like everyone.
Niels Pollitt was second. Seriously, I've looked at these results and I've thought either A, there's still 60 riders to come in, or B, there's been some kind of cock up with the timing system. Like, if you were to look at this top 10, Paris-Nice TT, 30 minutes, average of 50k an hour, you just wouldn't believe it. You actually wouldn't believe it.
Everyone's just gone back for the summer or the winter months, back to the hometown and just been on the TT rig for 4 months on end.
We'll just quickly go over the top 10. Simon Yates, Niels Pollitt, Kwiatkowski, TJ Van Garen, Martinez, Bernal, Craddock, Scully, Soler, Luis Leon Sanchez, and then, yeah, Youngles in 11th. Bizarre results. But anyway, Bernal picked up the chockies overall. Jack Haig was 4th overall, which I think we should touch on Jack.
He's going to feature in the main talking points.
Yeah,
we
got a nice
middle
little,
of the potty.
Nice little clip from Jack. We'll get onto that shortly.
Hopefully.
But also, Alex, the other race that was been on is Torino. Mitchell and Scott scorched the team time trial. Michael Hepburn picked up the blue leaders jersey, which is great. He's a genuine team man. He's a club man. You know, if it was a footy club, you'd talk about him as a club man. He's one of the boys. He's always doing the job, and he's picked up the leaders jersey in Torino. But probably the biggest talking point out of that first stage was the crash that happened. A rogue spectator, obviously drunk or on some sort of gear, just completely oblivious to Bora, who were coming down the street at 60k an hour. And he got hit. He got hit pretty hard.
He genuinely got bowled over. But also, like, there was the dog for Mitchelton Scott. Like, it was a bit of a cowboy event. Like,
quite Italian,
yes,
you'd say?
Yes, the Italians are traditionally very relaxed, very... It's just how they do it, but they're taking a bit too far. And there was a bit of feedback on Twitter from them, just especially from Larry. Wall.
Larry's
gone. A very fair point saying, hey, you stitch us up with a fine for coming up with the wrong socks
coming
on.
Coming late to sign on.
Late to sign on, but you can't string together a bit of security for our course. Yeah. All we want is a course where we're not going to get cleaned up by a spectator. Yeah.
Man, it's just a one-way street out there. We know that.
So, yeah, that was a little bit poor. But Mitchelson Scott, full credit.
Super fast, an average about 57.
10 time trial on the tour this year.
Alex Edmondson
was there.
The mate, specialist.
The specialist might get a little feature.
Alaphilippe and GVA, we saw the first showdown between them. Yeah, GVA was at Strada, but he didn't quite have the legs. And Alaphilippe again, he beat him in a sprint that you probably think GVA probably would clean up in his best form, but maybe Alaphilippe, he's getting to that age, he's 26, turning 27 this year. He's becoming quite a seasoned pro. Look, he's been good for a number of years, but he's got 5 years under the belt in the World Tour now. He can do it.
It was all class at Strada, which, as you said, you expect him to get up there, I think, over GVA. But in that kind of drag racy-ish, part-time sprinter-ish finish, you'd still think GVA would get over the top of him. And maybe a little bit of, ooh, dear, for CCC with their rider. That is the team.
Yeah.
That is the entire team is on GVA.
It is. We talked about Bevan, but let's be honest. It's GVA.
Oh, dear.
I guess, there's still plenty of time. There's still all of April.
I know, we're judging him off one result.
But still, there's the clock's
ticking. The team is on that rider.
Yeah. Viviani picked up a stage win, and also a team that we'll touch on later in the piece. We've got a question about them, but Astana with Luchenko winning a stage, crashing twice in the last 15K to win in a four-up group. And then Jakob Fuglsang won last night on a filthy, filthy stage with about a 30% climb. So Jakob, he's having a super season, second at Strada Bianchi, so... Quickstep and Astana are really the two standout teams of the season so far. So the last week, that's pretty much the two big races that I think we need to touch on.
Our take, we're going to run through two or three talking points. The Oceania Championships, which was on at the weekend. Brackets, our first commentary gig. Taffy breaks his collarbone.
Not doing Roubaix. I'm sure he had about four or five teams that were just waiting in the wings for his signature.
Yeah.
But sadly, he's broken his collarbone, so there'll be no Roubaix for the 50-year-old.
And the third point, Mr. Jack Haig, after his performance last week. The first point, Oceanus. You were down there Friday for TT. I joined you on Saturday for the road race. I had a good weekend.
I really enjoyed it. I was pretty nervous on the Friday, to be honest. I was there by myself, hadn't really done a TT or hadn't done any sort of commentary at all. So I was by myself. TT was okay because there's riders that's coming, going, and you can just talk about whoever's in the start gate. So that was okay. Ben Dybul took the chockies in the seniors with McGuinness winning the under-23s. Kate Perry won the women's. So all the favourites kind of got the job done. And then Saturday, Alex, the road races in Railton, it was good, especially the under-19 boys in the morning, Finn Fisher Black. This is a good name, huh?
It is a genuine name, and he's a good rider too.
He's a super rider.
Cleaned up in the time trial and then also came back and did the double the day after in the road race after the Kiwi boys put on a bit of a clinic.
Might
have put the Aussie boys just back in their place a little bit.
Maybe. I think, you know, Paddy Eddy, he was under 17, national champ, comes straight into the 19s, does the double. So it's probably a good thing for him to realise that there's some other really good kids out there. Yes, he's only a first year. Let's keep that in mind, is Paddy Eddy. But Finn Fisher Black is second year. He looks like he's about 20. He's got a good physique on him. We know what he's done on the track. He set the new world record in the 3K pursuit. We were a little bit unsure about what he would do on the road, and it was a tricky course, wasn't it, down there in Railton?
It was a climber's course, which we'll talk about later, resulted in a hill climber winning the men's race. And so for him to drag himself around, but probably the highlight of that under-19 race was just the NZ boys taking the bull by the horns, putting riders up the road. The riders were coming back. The break rate came back in the end just after having a 40-second gap, one lap to go, and then Finn Fisher Black launched out of the peloton and came in solo, which was good for our calling because probably wasn't our strongest point in calling the finishes with not a whole lot of being out of recognition of the ride.
And also not a whole lot of information of what was actually happening out on the road, so we couldn't really prepare for the call. But I think, I don't know, we got through all right.
And we held our own.
It helps when a rider comes in solo. But before the race, we talked about the under-19s maybe not being you know, used to riding in a team and actually working for each other. Especially the Continental Championship, you see riders maybe go rogue a little bit, but yeah, they were committed.
Yeah,
like
we were
19s group was working like a well-oiled machine.
Well, they must have been listening because we were calling them out on the start line, going, "Yeah, nah, there's heaps of them," but they're, like, they're not actually going to work together. They're going to just be individuals out there, and then they delivered.
They did.
The under 19 girls was actually really good too.
Only 16 stars, and we thought, "Wow, this is going to be hard for the girls to actually put on a race," but they put on a good show. And Tasmania's own Caitlin Turner, we heard on the radio that she was attacking all day, all night. She's not got the best sprint. She'll be the first to admit that. But she was trying, and I think she's won a lot of, well, especially us, she's won us over this weekend, Alex.
Yeah, no, I think we could say we're both maybe a little bit biased, but big fans of Caitlin Turner. Threw it down, but all in all, it was an enjoyable under-19 women's race. They were doing heaps.
I think they were last lapping about 5 minutes quicker than the elite women.
Yeah.
We were expecting them to come in maybe 5 minutes slower, and then they're coming 1K to go. Hang on, it's only been 45 minutes. Like, they were moving. But then I guess the blue ribbon event of the weekend was the elite men's race, and Ben Dybul won by 4 minutes, Alex. And this wasn't one of those scenarios where he just bounces up the road, there's a bit of messing around, and the race just blows out. There was guys like Chris Harper, Jason Christie chasing, chopping off full gas, but Ben Dybul was in the original break, and then he just rode away. He just rode away all day, and in the end, 4 minutes, it must have been about 2.5, 3 minutes he took on the last lap. So he could have done another two laps, I think. He was looking that good.
Well, Chris Harper did his traditional nationals fashion and just went from the get-go.
Yeah.
Brake on the first climb, tacked the brake on the second climb, like he was on a mission. Talking to his team boss before, he'd just come out of altitude, so he was a little bit unsure how he'd go on the back end. But, well, we did know, not little did we know, we did know Ben Dybul was there, and he just placed himself in the move, placed himself in Harper's second move, and then with two laps to go, just went on a mission. Got himself out to a minute 10 seconds, I think. We weren't getting a whole lot of feedback from the Twitter, but got himself out to about a minute 10 seconds, and then we're like, oh, there was three riders behind him.
Strong riders.
And we're like, ah, oh, this might be the end of him. Like, he could hang himself out to dry. Turns out, he put 4 minutes into him.
He's a rider that he's been super unlucky not to crack a gig at the World Tour. I think someone that can climb like he can time trial. He's only about 60 kilos, but he absolutely scorched the pancake flat TT in Evandale. He put some big time into his rivals, and he's someone that I think he's going to keep chipping away, and especially, Alex, this is something that's worth noting, 250 UCI points to win a continental championship, which includes Oceania's. And put that in a little bit of perspective, Julian Alaphilippe picked up 300, winning Strada Bianchi. Jakob Fuglsang 250 in second at Strada. So it's the equivalent, points-wise, of coming second at Strada Bianchi, which is crazy, isn't it?
We might just answer Jethro Nagel's question here on Twitter, which was, Oceania titles, what do they mean to riders, perspective teams looking at talent? Like, if we were talking about Michael Freeberg at the start, on the brink of a very good contract, he's national champion now, he's shown what he can do, he's back. 250 points puts him at that, I guess, gives him that attractiveness in the sense that if they're weighing up him and another rider, if one's got 250 points to their name, equivalent to fourth or fifth in Paris-Nice?
I think it was fifth. Fifth on the general.
On the general in Paris-Nice. That's enough to get you over the line. That means a lot.
Yeah, it does.
That could be all you need to get into the pro ranks.
Yeah.
And I think that goes a little bit underrated. Like, I never raced it as an elite, but as an under 23, it was always like, oh yeah, Oceania's.
Yeah, but it was also like, it was almost like an automatic qualification for Worlds. You're the Oceania champion, you qualify your nation. I think you qualify your nation one, but you've also, you're also in straight away. They can either A, take you, or B, leave you out, but they can't sub in another rider for you. Yeah. So they kind of just take you because, well, we'll have six there instead of five.
And we also, we always used to stay after our training camp to Oceania's for that reason, to get an extra spot at Worlds. Yeah.
But also just a quick note is Dybul, I think these rankings, they kind of roll over. It's not like a January to December kind of thing. It's some sort of date to date. But he's moved himself into the top 60 riders in the world with that over the last rolling period. So, like you said, he becomes now quite attractive to some of those World Tour teams that, if it comes to the crunch, they need to start picking up some riders with a few more points. He really comes into the equation, and we know he can do a good Asian scene as well. And he's with a team in Asia. He's third at Langkawi last year. So I think things could be looking up for Ben Dybul if he continues in this form. And was he in form?
Can he go pro?
I think the only thing that's probably going to work against him is his age. He's not a spring chicken anymore. He's 29.
But
maybe riders might look at him. Oh, sorry, directors and managers might look at him and say, "Well, why hasn't he gone well to her? What's been holding you back?"
So would you sign him? You're director of Mitchelton Scott. What do you do?
Well, I don't see him going.
Say he snags enough victories this year.
Well, I think yes. I think he can. He has shown when he's had the opportunity that he can do performances like this. Langkawi third. I think I would give him a chance. Maybe it's because I like him, Alex. I can't completely detach myself away from the scenario. But to answer your question, if it was me, yeah, I'd give him a start.
Our take on point number two, Andrea Taffy, winner of Paris-Roubaix 20 years ago. He announced last year that he wants to have another crack at the race. And, well, there's a bit of a story in between that. But on the weekend, he snapped his collarbone in a local club race. I don't know. I'm just reading the news.
That's the report. But, it's all come out that
he's not found out. He's gone, oh, dear.
Well, his Paris-Roubaix dreams have been dashed quite close to the depart. I don't imagine he had a team in place. I think the latest news was that the organisation was going to let him start like a few minutes ahead of the bunch. He was going to see how long he could stay out there.
Which just sounds
absolutely bizarre.
I read that article about five times.
You read that article?
Yeah, because I'm like, what do you mean? Like,
why would you do that? Why don't you just sit in the VIP just sliding lagers all day?
Who's winning out of this? Like some ex-rider.
It doesn't look good for the organisation as well. Like, what are you doing?
I don't trust that article. I think that was made up.
I mean, I guess we're talking about he's kind of put himself back into the news, but I don't think he was really ever going to get a team on board to A, actually sign him, and then B, sacrifice one of their existing riders to give him a spot.
He's an Italian legend, though. He is 20 years out of the sport. Is he just getting to a point where he's like, I just need a bit of love? Bit of recognition.
Like a band when they get back together after 15 years.
Yeah,
like
we need John Farnham
cash, we need to get back on the scene.
Doing 17 reunion tours. But like, I don't know his backstory really at all besides his achievements. Don't know what he's done for the last 20 years. Like, he's obviously still fit. He obviously still loves the sport. If he's, you know what, they're put up here in Italy. You are the king of the world.
Shippo.
Yeah, exactly. you can do whatever you want. So
Shippo has, according to our cameraman over here, Riley, saying he's been on rogue. We're not laughing about what he's done, but like he's been a bit of a wildcat, all reports. What's he been doing, Riley? Do you want to come and just...
Come treat yourself to a microphone.
I did read a couple of things. Cycling Tips covered it quite well, the rival podcast, saying that he's got a couple of court dates coming up as a result of some violence and stalking charges, so don't know.
Yeah, grippy times.
Whoops.
Yeah, it's good at all anyway.
But yeah, to put a pin on that, he won't be doing Roubaix.
He won't be doing Roubaix, no, because he snapped his collarbone. But my theory is that he was just looking for a bit of love. And we gave him that bit of love on the podcast by getting talking point number two. On to number three. He's been a bit of he hasn't been an excitement this week.
He hasn't at all.
He was just in excitement when he saw him on the stat sheet at the end of the GC. But Jack Haig, point number three, fourth on the general classification at Paris-Nice.
That's huge, isn't it?
Excuse me? But also, the reason why we say he hasn't been in excitement all week, we didn't see him all week.
Well, Alex, here's a bit of a fun fact for you. He actually didn't finish inside the top 10 once on any stage. That's why we didn't see him. That's why, because I'm looking at the results every day. It's like, oh, no Jack Haig in the top 10. But he just kept climbing the GC every day. He just kept popping up. And to finish fourth on the general in Paris-Nice, if you had said that to me, maybe even last year, we know he can climb. But Paris-Nice is that race where you need to be careful in the crosswinds. You need to be able to do a time trial. It's early in the season. There was a few question marks there, and of course, probably helped that Yates got spat out in the crosswinds early in the piece, so he became the focal point of the team.
But then also, I do recollect him doing the job for Trenton on the day that
Magnus Cort.
The day that Magnus Cort went boom from the breakaway, yeah. Which is a whole other thing in its own. He was doing a bit of a work there for Matteo Trenton, so he didn't automatically just slip right into that. GC role. So I love his work. I love his hustle. Like you pointed out, it's a hard race, but also he is to the book. Like things go bang, 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 bang. And when they click, they click. Like
And when he was under 23, we thought, well, how much more can he improve? He is doing everything. He's eating well. He's doing his stretching. He's a regimer. How much more can he improve? But he's gone leaps and bounds. He was seventh in Valencia, seventh at Ruta del Sol, the Andalusia, and now he's fourth in Paris-Nice. So he's becoming a genuine one-week specialist, Alex, and it'll be interesting to see whether he does get that start of the Tour de France.
Is that part of the progression? You got to start to, before he's got the ability to drag himself around 3 weeks.
Well, we know he can drag himself around 3 weeks.
We know he can, but to be out of perform at that level for 3 weeks. That's a whole other story.
Different, yeah, it's different doing GC to being good on stage 7, stage 14, 16, and stage 20. You need to be good on 21 stages, just not...
And having an absolute shocker on stage 14 and dragging yourself over 3 mountains.
Yeah, exactly. So I do like what he's doing, Alex. I think Mitchelton's been super with him. I think he's found a really good fit there. And, yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see his progress this year, and hopefully he does get that start at the TDF.
I think, too, I was a little bit concerned about him at Mitchelton it's a bit of a logjam there.
Yeah, it is.
It's not...
There's even guys coming through now with Lucas.
But he's found his own.
Yeah.
From all reports, he's got a lovely girlfriend. He's set up in Andorra now. Just seems like he's just got everything sorted. He's just there.
That's what we always talk about, Alex, is making yourself at home in Europe is number one key. And he's done that. I don't think he's come back to Australia for maybe at least 2 summers.
He's a proper Euro dog.
He's a full Euro dog. He's got his place in Andorra. He's in the mountains. He's always skiing. So he's getting into that European lifestyle. Got a British girlfriend. So he's really at home, and it's great to see.
Yeah, just got a little clip here from Jack Haig wired into us, just talking about his Paris-Nice and what the rest of 2019 has in store for him.
Hey, mate. Just going over the race. I'm super happy with the result that I got and to be able to take the opportunity that I was given after Simon lost some time in the crosswinds early on in the race, which also caught out many of the other GC riders. Was super nice. It's not very often I get a chance to lead the team with such high caliber of riders that we have, so to be able to capitalize on that and have the whole team sort of back me for the rest of the week was super nice. And yeah, couldn't be happier with fourth. If I had the legs, I would have loved to have tried to try and leapfrog Kwiatkowski in the last stage, but it was pretty filthy and pretty hard, and I didn't really have the legs, so I have to be happy with fourth. And now, looking ahead, I have actually a bit of a break. I have a bit of a different race calendar to what I've had the last couple of years, where I've normally raced Catalunya and Pays Basque before the Ardennes. But this year it's slightly different with much more racing early on in the season with Vuelta Valencia and Ruta del Sol and now Paris-Nice. So I'll take 5 days more or less now at home in Andorra, relatively easy, and then go to Sierra Nevada for 2 weeks of altitude, come back to Andorra for 1 week, and then I start the Ardennes with Brabant-Sepil and then Flèche and Liège. Before going back to Andorra, and probably I'll stay back at altitude then, and then prepare for the Giro, which is sort of the next big objective. I built up the first half of the season sort of aiming to have the first peak at Paris-Nice, which worked out well, and now sort of take a bit of recovery and rebuild for the next goal, which is to help Simon at the Giro, and hopefully we can get a little bit closer to the pink jersey. Last year we got so close, so it'd be really nice to be able to go back and sort of repeat the performance and finish the Giro with a pink jersey.
The future. Welcome to the future, everyone. Campbell Flakemore is going to take us through what's coming up in the next week. There's one major talking point.
There's a big talking point next Saturday, or this Saturday,
rather. This Saturday,
rather.
Yeah.
I mean, the more immediate future, Torino Adriatico, still got a few stages to go. Tonight, on paper, it should be pretty routine. Adam Yates, he's got a little bit of a buffer over Roglic. He took that on last night, got a little bit of a gap. So he heads into that final time trial. It's only 10K, but he's got 25 seconds on Roglic, who is probably the more accomplished time trialist. But 25 seconds in 10K, I'm not quite sure if he can do that. Tom Dumoulin's working at 155, but of course that's a little bit too far off the mark. It was a 50K TT, maybe it'd be a different story. But 10K, I probably think Adam Yates probably just goes into that final time trial as the favourite.
Roglic is a bit of a gut runner, you might
He's
describe.
He's a gut runner.
Sorry. I was just waiting to say gut runner. What were you saying?
Roglic is probably a little bit too far off the mark. 25 seconds to Yates. He's only 10K. Mm. Riding with the leader's blue jersey on your shoulders gives you a little bit more motivation. I think probably Yates goes in as the slight favourite, even though Roglic is a proper TT. He's been on the podium at Worlds, but 10K.
Coming from behind, he's got the time checks. Him and his brother, well, based off his brother's condition, they've been on the
he's
TT rigs all
he's
right.
He's apparently
so,
a TT guru now.
I agree, he should be fine. And then on Saturday, Campbell, Milano, San Remo.
It's probably the first big appointment, you'd say. We've had Strade Bianchi, we've had Paris-Nice, we've had Torino, but San Remo is the first monument of the season. And it's one of those races where everyone that is good kind of fancies themselves. Guys from Vincenzo Nibali, who won last year, to genuine sprinters can win here. So it's a race that it's almost impossible to predict. And a guy who was second last year, he's been building himself up in his own socials, Caleb Ewan. He's putting a lot of pressure on himself. Isn't it more than anyone else, more than team, more than media? It's himself on his Instas. He's saying, oh, pulling out, big goal, Milan-San Remo.
But, like, he loves that. He thrives
off
that.
We know that.
You give him a bit of pressure on his shoulders. It was one of the things he struggled with at Mitchelton Scott was didn't have the seven men. It's like, I want every man and his dog out there for me. But this is his, like, he needs to make an impression on this team. He's won one race, but he's been second a lot. Geez, if he can pull this off, this is going to be an absolute perfect start for him as he heads into his contract with Lotto Soudal. And just to give the boys a bit of confidence that their new man can pull it off.
Yeah. You're talking about having that team support in the final, but you don't get a whole lot of team support. You kind of got to pull your own gun out and start fighting yourself. If it comes to the finish, we saw that he was the quickest by an absolute mile last year. Absolute mile.
Absolute torched him.
Absolute mile. But the thing that worries me a little bit is if you focus completely just on one race, it's not like the cobbled specialists, they get a few chances, or the Ardennes get a few chances, or you target TDF or Giro, where sprinters might get four or five chances, two good ones, let's say. It's one day, and if you're off, then you're not going to be winning.
And also, you can't control if Vincenzo Nibali puts in Peter Sagan does something different and goes on the downhill. Like and then also you got the other sprinters there too, as you said, you got to be on as well.
Yeah.
I think, yeah, there's a lot of risk, but you know just as well as I do, he can perform when he needs to. He loves it.
He does. He genuinely loves putting pressure on himself.
Yeah. It doesn't make any sense at all. It's like the opposite to a normal person.
Yeah.
Which is why he's so good. But if he doesn't pull this off, he's going to be absolutely ropeable. Yeah. Like absolutely ropeable.
Well, he pulled himself, or him or the team decided that it was best for him to step out the last two stages of Paris-Nice, freshen up a little bit. He wasn't going to get anything He wasn't going to get anything out of those last two stages. Got some good solid racing in. Got close a couple of times. So yeah, for him, it's all focused on that. But I think Elia Viviani, Albi, he's had a good start to the year. National champion kit, Italian national champion
kit. Home soil.
In San Remo, and he's probably been the standout sprinter so far. Maybe Bennett and Groenewegen, maybe a little bit quicker. But after two 90K, I think Viviani's going to be really hard to beat. And he's got the team as well.
Yeah.
He's got the team as well, so it's going to be a doozy on Saturday night, that's for sure.
The last segment of the day, the listener questions. You can answer this first one, Campbell. Pumpstagram says, how good can Bernal get? Bernal's 22.
He is. And
how old are you, Riley? 19.
Yeah.
He's a young pup.
Like I just said, he's the youngest winner of Paris-Nice of all time. Got poached kind of from Androni. And I think when he signed, I was kind of like, well, is this going to be another Ian Boswell, Dombrowski signing where they get signed up, they do the donkey work two or 3 years and they get spat out? Seriously, Boswell and Dombrowski were super under 23s.
Yeah.
And look, they've done good stuff in the...
Even the Henao bros, they're good.
Yeah, exactly.
But
it's
not.
It's the same sort of thing. So I was a little bit worried, but what he did last year, especially at the Tour de France, I was like, well, maybe this is going to be a little bit different. Maybe this guy is on another level. And then he goes and wins Paris-Nice.
Because we were gauging this off his performance at Tour de l'Avenir, where he was unbelievable. Yeah. Like, he took the chockies over, like we saw Lucas and Jai Hindley dominate throughout the year. He took them to the cleaners.
The South Americans always do that, don't they? You don't really see them all year, and then
I don't know where they race.
Neither do I.
Yeah, they're just mystery men.
How good can he get? Well, I think I said on this pod, with Josh, I said he will win the Tour de France sometime. Like, give me a market for it.
Pumped Instagram. There's your answer.
Yeah, I think he can be a world leader, Alex. I think he can be possibly the best climber of all time.
Second question from Tom Hamilton. Athletes getting gigs on teams based solely off lab testing and not off merit or results. What do you reckon?
Of course.
It happens. I got most of my gigs.
You were a good tester,
Albie.
A really good tester.
Yeah.
Remember that, what was it? Was it the 4-minute test just before, at one of the selection camps, I think you had the best.
Yeah.
I think that's probably what...
It got me over the line. Because there was... Well, we were in a scenario where there was the elite three that were winning races. And then the rest of us were getting top fives, top tens. But we weren't winning races. So yeah, the 4-minute test and the VO2 test got me over the line. All about it. Yeah. I'm not champion de monde, though.
Well,
I think... But then you always hear people, when Simon Gerrans speaks, he's like, couldn't test at all, was useless. And look how good a rider he was. Yeah. So,
one thing's for sure, it definitely doesn't translate to doing good stuff on the road. There's no, I don't think there's like a direct. Maybe in TTs, yes, but even then, I still think there's a lot of other things that go into a time trial rather than just being able to do a good lab test.
The podcast with Andre LaGersh, I asked him that question, like how much, like looking at a guy's heart, what can you tell?
And well, didn't he say that he, like, based off the physiology, he can tell you'll be a good athlete or you won't?
Yeah. So you can tell that, but then you can't tell who's going to win the bike race. You can tell probably the top 20.
Yeah.
You can go, all right, you're going to be able to hold your own in the dance, but you're not going to be able to pick the guy that can race like Alex Edmondson, the guy that wants to throw it in the barriers to win. Like,
not everyone can be a gut runner, Alex.
No, not everyone can be a gut runner, and that's important. Not everyone can do the Robert Harvey left-handed bounce down the middle
of the Telstra Dome.
So I think that's the answer. Like, it's got its place in the sport.
Definitely look into it. But I don't think it should be the be-all and end-all.
No, be-all and end-all. And I think all in all, character and your ability to win. I think ability to win is hard to measure, but unless you're putting results on the board. But your ability to win and your ability to want to race. Like you always talk about GVA, how much of a racer he is.
Yeah, exactly.
That's invaluable.
With Alaphilippe, they're the same sort of guys.
But then also, you look at Hagee. He's a stats man. Yeah. He is. He's a stats man.
He's not a gut runner.
He's not a gut runner. He's a stats man. So there's two parts to that equation, and I think they complement each other.
Yeah.
Fox Williams, strongest team of the season so far, Quickstep or Astana?
It's pretty close, isn't it, Alex?
You take the sponsorship on both of them.
Yeah, I think it's 19 wins for Astana. 17 for Quickstep. Probably a little bit more quality from Quickstep.
And the thing about the Quickstep victories, they're all in their homeland. Like that's value for money except for there's a few outliers, but they cleaned up in the Classic, which is the value for money for the sponsors. It's something that Lefebvre can take to the locals. It's getting in the press. All the locals getting excited about it. They're getting on their boys.
Well, especially the pressure that comes with opening weekend and all the hype for opening weekend to go and do it B2B and then win the same a couple of days later midweek.
And then also get that global exposure winning Strada.
Yeah, and like then Strada as well. So the one day is they've got some stage wins here and there in Argentina, Colombia, TDU, and they also won Cadel Evangelista and Road Race at the start of the year. So they've picked up a lot, but then Astana, on the other hand, winning in Colombia, winning in Oman, three stages, and the overall with Luchenko, Paris-Nice, bits and pieces, Andalusia, Fuglsang, and then stage wins in Torino, Fuglsang and Luchenko. I think, like you said, at exactly the start of this question, you take both. But if I had to choose, I think I'd probably go with the Quickstep wins.
Yeah, I agree. Is anyone going to be able to stop Bernal, the Giro this year, from TT Daily?
Exactly what we talked about at the start, Alex. It's one thing to be good bits and pieces for 21 days, like Bernal was in the Tour de France, but it's another thing to be on the money 21 days in a row.
And I've never got to that point, but I feel that's what you develop when you've done a few grand tours. Yeah. You go, the question is always, day 14, hilly day, you didn't get a good night's sleep, you've got bad legs. How do you get through and can you hang on?
Yeah.
Or do you have an absolute chocker? Be good for the other 20 days, but your race is over.
Yeah, and I just think guys that are a little bit more weathered, like Tom Dumoulin, Vincenzo Nibali, I know one of the Yates boys, I think it's S. Yates, is going to be going there. Roglic, Aru, who knows what he's going to do. Miguel Lopez. So there's a lot of guys that have that experience of doing the 21 days at the top level, chalked up results in the top five in Grandies. So look, it wouldn't be a surprise. I don't think we could stage win. Of course, I think a stage win, but I don't think it would be a surprise if he went out and won it. But I just think he's probably just a little bit too young, and I think you probably need to go for GC in a Grandie once or twice before actually winning it. Do you concur?
I concur.
Yeah.
I think, he's a little bit of a volatile bet. He might be able to, he could pull it off, but
I'd probably say no.
I wouldn't mortgage the house on it.
No.
From Michael Potter, snagged a podium on the
he did
on the weekend, so this might be a a little bit influenced by that. Thoughts on combining the under 23 and the elites at the championship event, which happened at the Oceanas on the weekend?
Well, from a like an organisational perspective, it makes a lot of sense, doesn't it? That's another 4 hours they need to close the roads. A lot of extra cost that goes into it with the police and the permits and everything like that. So from that kind of viewpoint, you can see why the organisation does it. They don't have like the big entries like they do for a national championships. So that's why they run it together, the elite and the under 23s. But it definitely creates a weird dynamic, doesn't it? It's like we saw Tyler Lindorf come across the line celebrating. It's like, well, you just ran like 12th. Like, this is a bit weird, but still great that he wins the championship. But it kind of takes a little bit of the polish off the under 23s that came in for, I think it was, I don't know, what it was, 7th or
it does. But when you've only got, when you got like a start list of 60, cut it in half, it's 30 riders. It's, you wouldn't combine the national championships because there's two genuine fields in there, but you'd, for me, you combine the Oceanas. If you want your own race, call up 50 of your mates and get them to enter, and then they might look at giving you your own race, I reckon.
I think, let's just be clear, I think we'd rather see two separate races.
It'd be better. It'd be better,
100%,
yeah.
But you can tell from an organisational perspective that it just makes sense to run them together.
That's all for question time. Our stat man and videographer, Riley Hart, came up with a little idea before. Do you want to just pause the video and run us through that?
So we'll be setting up a fantasy velo games league. Details to come, but for the spring classics, and we'll have some cool prizes for the winner. At this stage, t-shirt, hopefully, depending on our upon arrival, exactly, could be a little bit delayed, but t-shirt, and you know, we'll see what else we can wrangle. But yeah, you know, join. All the info will be on the socials shortly with a login info and make your team, and we'll see who's the best fantasy DS.
One rider, Alex. If you who's number one draft pick for your spring classics fantasy team? Riley, is it Ardennes and Cobbles? It's okay.
Number one rider.
Number one draft pick. Who's
Max Gawn in the rock in the ruck?
Well, yeah. I mean, you take Gawn. Although Grundy, you go with him maybe.
I don't know.
Be more of a gut runner.
But then you've also got the Ardennes to think about.
So for me, at this stage, I'd probably go with Oliver Nason. I'm not sure if he's going to be doing Ardennes, but he climbed with like the front group in Paris-Nice last night.
Which would mean he's probably going to do the Ardennes.
Yeah, but he's a cobbled specialist. So for me, I'd probably go with Oliver Nason, number one pick.
Number one pick.
Just for that, just because of that balance that dynamic between the two. Yeah.
Yeah. With him being the marquee rider, having not performed in those pre-classics, he's going to be so hungry for a victory.
Nikki?
No. Uh-huh. Maybe if I was completely subjective, Nikki, but I'm not a massive fan of him after last year. I think GVA, he's got that much pressure on his shoulders. He loves racing. He's a super rider. I think he's your number one pick. He's got to deliver CCC something.
Yeah, he does.
He has to. Yeah.
Thanks,
Riley, for videoing the podcast. Thanks for coming around, Cambo.
Thanks, Alex, for the start.
And thanks to Matt for all the support, as always. We'll see you back at the Social Club next time.